Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Gittin Daf Lamed. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief four-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins from the Mishnah that you will find 14 lines from the top of Daf Lamed. Hamalve mois es hakoyen ves halevi ves heoni. A person extends a loan to either a kohen or a levi or a poor individual. And the method of payback is as follows. As the Mishnah says, Liois mafrish alehen me chelkon. The arrangement is that the tithes that this lender would ordinarily have to give away, the truma, for example, he would give to a kohen. The Meiser Rishon, he would give to a Levi. The Meiser Oni, during the third and sixth years of the seven-year sabbatical cycle, he would give to a poor man. The arrangement the lender makes is that in exchange for the loan, I'm going to loan you money. For example, he says to a Kohen, I'm going to lend you money, and the Truma tithe that I ordinarily would give away, I will keep for myself, and of course a non-Kohen is not allowed to eat it, but he will sell it to a Kohen. And the value that he gets for the sale, he, the lender, will keep, and that will be the repayment for the loan that he extended the Kohen. And similarly, with regard to a Levi, the difference being that with regard to the Meiser Rishon tithe, or the Meiser Oni tithe, those tithes, the produce of those tithes, is not forbidden to a non-Levi or a non-Oni to eat. So that the lender tells the Levi, you know, the 10% I ordinarily would have to give away to a Levi, since I loaned you the money, I'll keep the Meiser Rishon as payment for the loan that I gave you. And he does so becheskas shehein kayomin, with the assumption that the Kohen or the Levi or the Oni with whom he made this arrangement is still alive. And if you're wondering what is this Mishnah doing here in Maseches Gittin, it's because of this phrase, the Mishnayos we've seen already on Daf Chof Chesom and Aleph, Chof Chesom and Beis. We saw halachas that were dependent upon the assumption that the party was still alive. So this lender is going to be keeping the respective ties on the assumption that those very borrowers are still alive. V'eino choshesh, and we don't suspect shemo meis hakohen o halevi, that maybe the kohen or the levi died, o he'eshir he'oni, or the poor person that he had loaned the money to in the interim became a man of wealth. If we would have suspected, let us say, that those particular borrowers had died, so then the lender wouldn't be able to withhold the tithes that he would have had to pay to them. If they're gone, so it's not as if they are paying back their loan by his withholding their tithes. However, Mesu, if they in fact did die, Tzorach Litoil Rishus Min Hayorshim, the lender has to receive permission from the heirs that he can continue this arrangement namely withholding the tithes as payback for their father's loan. They have the right to say, no, we would prefer that you give us the tithes, and as far as our father's loan is concerned, so that will be paid back through some other means. Im hilvon bifnei beisdin, if the original loan took place in front of a court, eino tzorech litol rishus min hayorshim, then the lender does not have to receive permission from those specific heirs, because Beisdin has the power to say that the debt that was upon the Kohen is upon all Kohanim. And you'll ask, how in the world could that operate? So there's a strength that Beisdin has called Hefker Beisdin Hefker. When it comes to monetary matters, the court can make decisions and decide who owes what, who is to receive what. And in this case, it's to the benefit of all Kohanim and Levim that this arrangement continues, that the lender will withhold the tithes. This way, he'll be encouraged, and all others will be encouraged to lend money to Kohanim and Levim and poor people, knowing that this is a rather easy method of payback for the lender. And hence, more money will be available to the realm of Kohanim, Levim, and Aniyim. So, the action of Basin is really for their general benefit. The Gemara asks, as far as the arrangement is concerned, the lender will keep the truma. Does that mean the af al gav de lo osu liyode? Even if the tithe didn't get to the hands of the receiver of the Kohen or of the Levi, how can it be that the Malve keeps the tithes? How, is there not a Torah obligation of Nesina, of giving the tithe to the Kohen? We take a look at Rashi. V'af agav delo osu liyode b'tmiha. This is a question in wonderment. Afa pi she'eno nosnan l'kohen v'yachziran lo. Is the Mishnah suggesting that even if the lender does not actually give the truma to the Kohen, and the Kohen returns it to the lender as payback, katoni masnisen diyafu shalem, the Mishnah is saying that all he has to do is separate the truma from his produce and that's it? V'kevan delo motu liyodei, since the truma doesn't actually reach the hands of the Kohen, man zochi le lahai kohen hach truma, who is receiving on behalf of this Kohen the truma, she yekableno ze bechovo, that the lender should be able to receive the truma as payment. Veich yotzi yedei nesina, as we indicated before, there's a halachic requirement of giving the truma away to a Kohen. So how has that been fulfilled? The way we presented the case, a person lent money to a Kohen, and when tithing time comes, the owner, the lender, tithes his own produce and simply keeps the truma. But where do we find the truma in that scenario ever given to a Kohen, albeit and then returned to the lender as payback for the loan? We're looking for where was the chiyuv nesina fulfilled. Omar Rav. Rav presents us the first of three answers. B'makire kahuna ulavia. Rashi, b'makire kahuna kamo ish meis makoro. What does the word makire mean? So Rashi quotes a pasuk that we read, Shehem makirov lavov. The eino rogia losis trumos amaisus elu l'kayin zeh. We're talking about a scenario where the lender was accustomed to giving his tithes only to this Kohen. Hilkoch came with the Nusta Pshiti de Litu Yoyevlu, since it's so obvious that unto this Kohen the tithes would be given. Ashu Shah Kahani de Tayu, all other Kohanim remove their mindset, their thoughts from ever receiving this man's trumas. Vavi Kamanda Motu Liadayu Dahani. And it's as if the truma reached the hands of these Kohanim that we are featuring. And in our case, we're talking about Kohanim that happened to borrow money from this Yisrael. So since this Yisrael is known to always give his trumas to this particular Kohen and not to any other Kohanim, all other Kohanim have no intention, no thought even of receiving from this Yisrael, from ever receiving from this Yisrael, truma tithes. So that attitude on the part of other kind of aschi detayu, they remove themselves from the scene regarding this Yisrael. It's as if the truma got to the hands of the Kohen that he ordinarily gives his tithes to anyway. In this case, he's not going to be giving it to him. As we explained before, the Yisrael will withhold it as payment for the loan that he extended. Ushmuel Omar b'mezak lehem ayidei achirim. Shmuel says that the lender will, in effect, ask a third party, would you kindly take from me this truma on behalf of so-and-so Kohen that I happen to lend money to? And by doing that, he fulfills the chiyuv nesina. And then, after the third party takes the truma on behalf of that particular Kohen, he gives it back to the lender, and who will then sell it and keep the money for himself as payback for the loan. That's called mezake lahem ayidei achir. Ula Omar, ula a third approach, ha mani Rabbi Yosihi. This Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Yossi Diomar, also es she'eino zeiche kezeiche. The rabbis proclaimed someone who didn't actually receive as if he received it. Rashi goes through a number of sources where you find a rabbinic enactment similar to this. The Gemara now goes through each one of the opinions and why the two didn't say like the third. So kulhu karav lo amri, the others, Shmuel and Ula, didn't say like Rav, b'makire lo kotani. The Mishnah doesn't say that explicitly. It doesn't teach that we're talking about makire kuna, so I'm not going to assume that the one who received the loan was, in fact, an example of makire kuna. Kishmuel lo ko amri, the others, namely Rav and Ula, don't say like Shmuel, b'mezake lo kotoni. The Mishnah doesn't say that it was a case of mezake al yidei achir. And k'ula nami lo amri, Rav and Shmuel don't say like Ula, ki yechido lo mukmina. They don't want to set up an unnamed Mishnah like an individual opinion, like we call a shitas yochid, a minority opinion. Which is what Ula had done by saying that our Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Yossi. Tonu Rabbonan, Hamal veMois is okay. So Levi say this on Yos Mafrish alehin mechelkan, Mafrish alehin becheslu shein kayomin. That we already explained, that the Yisrael can assume that the individuals to whom he lent the money and the payback is going to be by withholding the tithes. That's all on the assumption that those borrowers are still alive. And the source goes on with a number of halachas that are related to the laws of interest and shemitah and other details. I would like just to preface and say that a number of these halachas are going to be the focal point of sukkis elsewhere in the Shas, so that we are not going to dwell on them now, simply because in order to gain an appreciation of these halachas, one really needs to have a great deal more background than introducing them and learning them locally. So, the first halacha is a halacha in the realm of ribis, of interest. There's a prohibition from the Torah for a Jew who loans money to another Jew to receive a greater amount in repayment than the original loan. Very simply, it's forbidden to take interest. This arrangement called Poisik Imoem Kishar Hazol means that if I'm loaning you, let's say, a dollar, and a dollar today has the buying power of buying 4 pounds of flour, we're making an arrangement that you will pay me back a dollar, even if later that dollar has greater buying power, that namely you can buy 5 pounds of flour. And therefore, if whether the payment is in cash or it's in products, since this was established at the outset, there is not going to be a problem of ribis. So to make this to state this in more practical terms, a loan might be extended where, as we said, I'm going to loan you a dollar, and at the time of the loan, that dollar could buy 4 pounds of flour. When payback comes back, in this case, payback is not going to be in money, it's going to be in produce, because he's going to be keeping the tithes. So that at the payback time, when eventually he comes to tithe his produce, one will discover that $1 is able to buy not 4 pounds of wheat, of flour, but 5 pounds of flour. So that when he's tithing his grains, he'll keep for himself 5 pounds. Even though at the time of the loan, the dollar that he gave had the buying power of only getting 4 pounds. So one, without having stated this, one might have thought, there, you've got a problem of ribis. You're giving him a dollar which has the buying power of 4 pounds of flour, and when you keep the tithes, you're going to be keeping 5 pounds of flour as payback. But as we said, since you're stating this arrangement at the outset, a loan for a dollar is given, and the value of a dollar in buying power is being returned, there is no problem of ribis. We must caution, as we've done many times in our Gemara marking shiurim, that one is not to walk away from our shiurim with practical halachic conclusions. And I emphasize this particularly in the realm of laws regarding ribis, which are very complicated, and the violation of ribis is considered a serious offense. So we're giving you a general framework in which to view things, but not any more than that. We continue in the Gemara. V'ein bo mishum ribis. Rashi says on the fourth wide line under the Gemara, V'ein bo mishum ribis, Bishar Poiskin Bo'inon, in general, when agreements are made regarding prices, we require Atshietze Hashar. That's a reference to the market value has been established. The Kan, in our arrangement, with the lender agreeing to receive his payback, the tithes, Kan Posek Bishas Halva. Here, the method of payback is established at the time of the loan, bekach vekach, for such and such quantity of grain, I will keep as payback, afal pi shelo yotza hashar, even though the public market value hasn't been posted yet. So that they are making an arrangement between themselves, I'm loaning you a dollar, and we haven't even reached harvest time, but we'll assume that the dollar can buy 4 pounds of flour. When I come to tithe my grains or my flour, I'll be keeping 4 pounds of flour. Even though, when this arrangement is made, the public market value of flour has not been established. So as we said, as we alluded to in the Rashi, that in general could pose a problem, but in this case we are overlooking that. We're saying it's not going to be a factor. It's not a restrictive factor. Number Gimel, the Ein Shvius Meshamotzo. Generally speaking, the passage of a Shmiti of a sabbatical year cancels loans. In this case, the Shmiti year passing will not prevent the lender from withholding the tithes as payment for a loan, even though it's a loan where Shmita has already gone by. So Shmita doesn't cancel loans like this, where the payback is by withholding of the tithes. V'im bo lachzor eino chozer. If he should want to back out, he cannot back out. Who are we referring to is a discussion later in the Gemara. Nisyashu habaylim ein mafrish aleihem. Rashi. Nisyashu habaylim kagon shuveyo kidei shiur truma shonazu. A lender extended a loan to a kohen with the expectation of keeping for himself all the truma tithes of this year. V'almanas lekablam b'shonazu. With the intention of keeping those truma tithes as payment. Traumatized of this year. V'rosh nishtadfu sadoisov. And the lender sees that his fields are suffering from crop sickness, a shidofon, sometimes translated as blast. V'nisyash me'oisa halva. And the lender says, oh, wow, look, and I made a whole arrangement to get my payback through keeping the tithes. There's not going to be any produce this year for me to even tithe to begin with. V'omar v'ay l'chasaron kis. And the lender says, woe unto me for my financial loss. V'achar kach chozru v'niskinu. And afterwards, the field started to blossom. Ein mafrish aleihem. The lender cannot take advantage of, we'll say, the surprise rejuvenation. The yeush dover avidu. The expression of hopelessness, forfeit. His expression of forfeit is considered a dover of it, a total loss. The Gemara continues. Let's read the last point of the Brice again. It's Yashu Abaylim. If the Bailim reached the point of Yeush, as we described, they saw that their field this year isn't going to produce any crops, and they expressed their exasperation concerning their loss. Ein mafrish aleihem. He can no longer, the owner, even if they start to rejuvenate, he cannot tithe those tithes and keep them for himself. Lefish ein mafrishin al ha'avud. One does not literally, it means one does not tithe concerning that which is a total loss. And in this case, what do you mean doesn't tithe? It means he doesn't separate, set aside the tithe and keep for himself after he expressed his expression of total loss. The subsequent rejuvenation, which will, of course, generate an obligation to tithe, but that is considered unrelated to the tithing arrangement that he had made with the Kohen or Levi. At this point, the Gemara goes over the points mentioned in the Braisa that we've noted with letters Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, and Hey. If you skim ahead in the Gemara, you'll see a number of Tanaic quotes. They're in frames. They're all from this source. And the lettering counting that you see is simply the same lettering that we saw in the source. So we go over this section by section. Omar, we had quoted above. Poisek imoyem kishar hazoil. The lender makes the arrangement with the Kohen that I'm lending you, as we said, a dollar, and even though right now the dollar has the buying power of 4 pounds of flour, when tithing time comes, I'm going to keep whatever a dollar would be able to buy at that time, even if the dollar will be able to buy more than it can buy right now. I will tithe and keep for myself that amount that the dollar could buy during when tithing season comes. I think it says pshita. This is an obvious halacha. Rashi says, in any condition that one makes, if one makes an arrangement like this to be paid back kishar hazol, who will protest? Regarding all cases where people have, let's say they pay in advance for fruit delivery. So they're paying in advance with the hope of getting fruits in accordance with the amount of buying power that that amount has at the point of delivery. So this source is telling us something that seems to be fairly obvious. Gemara says, "Ha komashma." What this source is telling us is, "Afal pi shelo posak kami sheposak domi." Even if he didn't actually spell out this arrangement of receiving payback kishar hazoil, if the cost of the produce goes down at the time of payback, the lender will be able to tithe and keep that increased amount of produce anyway, even if it wasn't spelled out. The second point, the ein bo mishum ribis, my taima, why is there no problem of ribis? We said before that the halacha of establishing values is only if a market value has been publicized. Prior to that, when it's too early in the season, there's no known market value of that particular produce. And here we're saying, well, they can make the arrangement even without the publicized market value. Why is that? Kevon dechi les lei, lo yohiv lei. Since, with regard to this lender-borrower relationship, since part of the deal involves the possibility that the lender will get nothing, we explained before, if the field experiences crop blast, the lender will be totally out of luck. He'll have no payback for his loan. So since there's a downside to this arrangement, ki is le nami, when in fact there are crops to be paid back, ein bo mishum ribis. As we mentioned earlier, the laws of ribis occupy an entire chapter in Maseches Bava Metzia, the entire fifth chapter of Bava Metzia. The chapter known as Ezu Neshech is dedicated to these concepts. One major theme in ribis is that when the lender is guaranteed payback, then you have set the stage for ribis possibilities, i.e. when the payback is more than the original amount loaned. However, if there's no guarantee payback of the original loan, then the laws of ribis are basically inapplicable to an arrangement like that. So that's why we say here, even though the public market value of the produce has not yet been established, they can establish a value between themselves. And that would not constitute a violation of the laws of ribis because of the added factor that the lender has exposed himself to a possible total loss. Let's continue in the Gemara. Vein shvius mishamotso. The passage of a Shemitah year does not cancel this loan, to lo karina bay lo yigos. The term lo yigos means do not pressure someone into paying back. A loan that is characterized by the, we'll say, the potential of the lender going to the borrower and saying, where's my money? I want you to pay me back. That kind of loan can be canceled by the Shemitah year. The Pasuk of Lo Yigos is in the context of this particular law. If we read the Pasuk together from Dvorim, Perek Tesvav, Pasuk Beis, you'll appreciate it all the more. It says in the Torah, V'zeh Dvar HaShmitah Shomot, Kol Baal Mashe Yodo Asher Yashe B'Reu. This is the law of Shemitah, that when the Shemitah year passes, all those loans that you had expected to collect, you shall no longer collect. Lo yigais esrehu v'esochiv ki kora shmita l'Hashem. Do not pressure the borrower to pay back, because the shmita year has come. So the kind of loan that shmita cancels is that kind of loan that, had shmita not passed, you would have been in the position to collect from the borrower. Here, the arrangement, in fact, was that the lender wouldn't collect anything from the borrower. Rather, the lender will withhold the tithes as payback. So it's a kind of loan that doesn't lend itself to what the Pasuk is saying, the lo yigos. The Gemara continues, Dalid, v'im bo lachzor eino chozer. And if he wants to back out of this arrangement, so he cannot back out. Omrav papa lo shanu elo bal habayis b'koyin. The one who cannot back out is the original lender, cannot back out from the deal he made with the kohen. If the original lender says, you know what, listen, I want you to pay me cash, and I'm going to, as far as the tithes are concerned, I'm going to tithe, and I'm not going to withhold the tithes, but I want you to pay back cash. So the Baal HaBayis, if he tries to do that to the Kayin, he cannot do that. Avol, Kayin beBaal HaBayis, im bo lachzor chozer. If the Kohen should want to back out and say to the Yisrael, say to the lender, listen, I would rather you give me the tithe and I will pay you back the loan in cash instead of your keeping the tithe as we previously agreed, he can do that. The Kohen, the borrower, can back out. And the Gemara cites a Tanaic source as a source for this, but it's rather terse. In the case of the purchase of fruits, if money was paid for the fruits, but the purchaser did not draw the fruits unto himself, the fact that money was paid is not a deal clincher. And therefore, if someone paid for fruits and didn't draw them, the deal can be, one could still back out of the deal. We look at Rashi. Avol koyin chozer bo. The Rashi we're reading together, six lines from the bottom. The kevan de asauhu kezoicher. Since the law, the Torah, which we saw before in the Ula's explanation, citing Reb Yossi, that they make the Kohen, he's like a Zoche. Let's read this again in the Rashi. We're reading from Avol Kohen Chozerbo, the Kevan di Asauhu Kezoche Yocholiton. Since the Kohen is being viewed as the one who, it's as if he received the fruits, so the fruits in our mind's eye are in the Kohen's possession. The Kohen can say, hey, listen, lo moshachto mimeni peros, you didn't draw from me the peros. And as we said before, without the act of meshicha, so the deal is not clinched. And therefore, the Kohen can say, as we just saw in the Rashi, you know, I want to back out from this. I want you to give me the tithes. I'll pay you back your loan. And not like we originally agreed. After all, you didn't make a kinyan yet on the peros that are in our mind's eye in the Kohen's possession. We continue in the Gemara. We saw in the Braisa, Nisyashu Abaylim, Ein Mafrish Alein, Lefish Ein Mafrishin Ala Ovud. If the owners saw that their field is a total loss and they gave up hope, they were Nisyashu, they cannot Mafrish Ala Ovud. We'll go over that as we just go on in the Gemara. Pshita, is this not obvious? That if the field has gone bad, so there's nothing for him to set aside as a tithe. The Gemara says, lo tzricha di okun. When the owner gave up hope, and expressed his exasperation, oh, he says, it looks like my field is a total loss, but at that point in time, okun, Rashi says, kvar olu bekone. It seems that there was some element of rejuvenation in the field. Mahu detemo, akanto milsahi, one without this source would have thought that since there was some element of rejuvenation in the crops, the owner's exasperation, his yeush, is not a yeush. And if it's not a yeush, so then the owner could, in fact, withhold the eventual tithes from this rejuvenated crop. So the Gemara says, Komash Malon, the source is telling me no. That once the owner expresses his exasperation from his perspective, having seen the field experience crop blast, the fact that if things turn around later on, that doesn't change the fact that the owner, the lender, was misyayish. And hence, he cannot keep the tithes as payment for the loan. Tanya, Reb Elozer ben Yankev Oimer, Hamal v'Mois. We'll see in this source similar ideas to that which we've been dealing with already. Loaning money to those kind of people that you ordinarily would deliver tithes to them. So one loaned money, as a kohen, as a levi, but beisdin umesu. The loan took place in beisdin, and then the kohen or the levi died. So the lender has a right to keep in his possession the tithes on the grounds that the one that died, the Kohen or the Levi, was a member of a tribe. So in your mind's eye, instead of in your mind's eye, you can view the money extended as a loan to the entire tribe. And hence, the tithes that you would have to give to a member of that tribe, you can keep for yourself. The Rashi, he explains a little more, we'll say accurately or detailed. Rashi says, Oiso ha-shevet, sha-korov lohem, bo-iso shevet roi li-yorsham. Whoever is a relative in that tribe is, technically speaking, in the line of inheritance. V'chol levim zeichen b'maisris, and all levim receive maisris, the maiser rishon tithe. Lefikach yakev zeh es ha-maisris b'shvil ha-korov lohem b'levia. Therefore, the lender can withhold the maisris because of any levi that is in effect a relative of the one to whom he had loaned the money. The Gemara continues. V'es ha'oni, the beisdin umeis, if a person loaned cash to a poor man in the court and the oni died, mafrish alav becheskas aniyeh Yisrael. The lender, when it comes to the meiser oni tithe, he separates the tithe and keeps it for himself, on with the assumption that the loan could have been viewed as if it was extended to any poor man in Israel. Rashi, three lines from the bottom, becheskas ani Yisrael, hacha lekol ameimar becheskas yorshim. Here we're not talking about assuming the heirs to be in the position of the original borrower. Shemo yorshim ashir mehen. It could be that this particular borrower had rich heirs. And hence they, the specific heirs, would not have been entitled to receiving this tithe to begin with. Rather, the lender can keep the tithe, separate the tithe and keep it for himself on the basis of other aniyim. The hoyel v'takonas aniyim hu, since this whole arrangement is for the ultimate benefit of the poor, it's to their approval that this legislation should apply to all of the aniyim, that a poor man will have easier access to a lender when the poor man needs to borrow money. Hilchoch ki gavi mishar aniyim lav gozel es aniyim hu. Therefore, this lender, when he withholds the meiser oni tithe from other aniyim, being that the one he loaned to had died, that's not considered an act of theft from the other aniyim. We continue in the Gemara. So we mentioned that if the loan took place to the poor man in court and the poor man died, so the lender is machfrish lehem becheskas ani Yisrael. And number two, Rav Achi Oimer becheskas aniye oilom. You can withhold the tithe on the grounds that you had loaned money to a poor man who is the member of the, we'll say, the international community of the impoverished. Within this source, the Gemara interrupts, and that's what you see in the brackets. The source will continue after the brackets, but in the meantime, let's read straight through. My binayu, what's the difference between the number one approach, that you're mafrish becheskas ani Yisrael, and the number two approach, which is much more expansive and says you can be mafrish becheskas ani oilam, that the tithe that you'll keep is viewed as if it's a payback to a loan that was extended to a member of the poor of the world. My binaya, what is the difference between these two explanations? We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Iko binayu aniye kusim. A point of difference between them would be the kusi, poor people. Rashi says at the top, aniye kusim, shim ein aniye Yisrael b'ir. If in that particular city there aren't any other impoverished Jews, v'yeshaniye kusim, but there are poor people from the Kusi people. The Kusi people were those that had converted to Judaism as a national entity, had converted to Judaism under questionable circumstances. So if you have a city where there are no aniye Yisrael, but there are aniye kusim. Mafrish l'tzorch v'yakfim la'atzmoy. Shav heim zoichin bohem de kusim geri emes heim. This approach says that the kusi conversion originally was an honest, authentic conversion. Therefore, you can include them in this calculation of withholding the tithe, even though the original borrower died, but you're withholding it because it's viewed as reviewing it as a loan to a member of the poor community, which according to this opinion includes the poor kusim. L'tanakamo gerei aroyas heim v'lo yafrish b'shvilam ela b'shvil aniye Yisrael yafrish b'chol mokom sheheim. According to Tanakamo, who emphasized aniye Yisrael to the exclusion on the Ikusi, because Tanakama, the first opinion, views the Kusi original conversion as being non-authentic. They converted out of fear of lions, not because of any affinity for Judaism. And therefore, they cannot be factored in my hafrosha. Therefore, when I'm mafrish and keep the hafrosha, I'm doing so because of Aniyei Yisrael, wherever they may be, even if they're not in this town. Gemara continues, top line, He'eshir he'oni, if the borrower had been poor, but in the interim became wealthy, ein mafrish alav, the lender cannot withhold the tithe as payment for the loan. After all, the one to whom he loaned is no longer in the realm of poverty. V'zocha halo b'ma shebiyado, and the borrower keeps that which he originally had. In other words, here's a fellow who gained loan money without having to actually pay it back. Bear in mind, and Rashi reminds us of that, that this lov is not chayef to pay back because the original arrangement was such that he was not obligated to pay back. The payback would have been through the hafrosha, through the tithe. Now, as we read this source, you noticed that when we were dealing with the oni prior to this, we mentioned that if the oni to whom you loaned the money died, so there's a takona for you. The lender has recourse. He can tithe and keep the meiser oni tithe in the name of Ani Yisrael or Ani Olam. In this case where the oni didn't die, the oni simply became wealthy, so we say, well, the Yisrael can't, that Yisrael has no recourse. He loses out the loan that he extended and the tithe he will have to give to other aniyim. The Gemara asks a question. V'rabbonan, my shno lemisa de avud takanta, my shno lashirus de lo avud takanta. As we explained a moment ago, why is it that when it comes to the case of the oni dying, so we have a takona, we have an enactment for the benefit of the lender that he can continue the arrangement, tithe and withhold the Meiser Oni tithe on behalf of other aniyim. But when it comes to the impoverished man becoming wealthy, we don't see any intervention on behalf of the lender for him to, say, salvage the situation by being able to keep, withhold the Meiser Oni tithe. The Gemara answers, there's a difference. Misa shchicha, ashirus lo shchicha. Death is a more common event than people becoming wealthy. So the Rabbanan intervene and issue enactments regarding topics that are viewed as shchicha, as common. Situations that are rare, that are not common, like a person becoming wealthy, that is something that figuratively speaking, didn't cross the minds of the Rabbanan when they issued special enactments. So it's not covered by any special rabbinic enactment. And therefore, in the case that the oni to whom you loaned the money became wealthy, so you and the original arrangement was that you're going to get payback through the tithe that you otherwise would have had to give him. Here, since he became wealthy, the tithe wouldn't be given to him to begin with. And therefore, there is no method for the Israel who loaned the money to get his payback. And as far as the tithe is concerned, he'll have to give the tithe to some other oni, to some other poor man. Omar Rav Papa, Hainu Damri and Shiitz, with this story, this distinction in mind, that the common saying states, Chavroch mis asher. If you're told that your friend died, asher means substantiate or confirm that, believe it. However, if someone tells you it's asher that your friend became wealthy, lo te asher. There's a play on words over here. The word asher with an ayin is a word indicating wealth. The word asher with an aleph indicates substantiation. So that if you're told that your friend became wealthy, that you don't have to accept. Mace tzorach litol rishus. We said that if the individual to whom you had loaned the money died, so then if you intend to continue the arrangement and withholding the tithes and not giving the tithes to the deceased's heirs, so you have to consult with them. Tanya, Rebbe Omer, Yorshin Sheyorshu. So Rebbe says something that seems to be unnecessary. Umi iko Yorshim de lo yarsi. Rebbe says that the deal is made with Yorshim that inherited. Is there such a thing as heirs that don't inherit? Elo Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Sheyorshu karka velo sheyorshu ksofim. Rebbe in the source said that the deal, the scenario where the borrower died and the Yorshim have to give Rishus, we're talking there about Yorshim that inherited land, not Yorshim, not heirs that inherited Karka. And Rashi explains, it's heirs that inherited land that have the obligation to pay back their father's loans. Therefore, they are the ones that are in the position to grant this permission, because otherwise they would have to pay the loan out of their pocket, because they inherited land, and a person's land there's a lien upon a person's land to pay back that individual's debts. Omar Reb Yoinason. Take note of the numbering. This is the first of two opinions. Hiniach mole machat. If the love, the borrower that died, left to his heirs. Mole machat is an expression, literally a needle size. It means a very small amount of land. Goive mole machat. So the malve, the lender, can collect through his tithes an amount of tithes that's worth that small amount of ground, of karka, that the heirs inherited. Mole kardom, that's an expression referring to a lot of land. Goive mole kardom. So then, in accordance with the amount of land inherited, the lender will collect accordingly. For Rabbi Yochanan Omar, afilu hiniach mole machat, even if all the borrower left was a small amount of land, goive molo kardom, the lender can still collect his entire loan. Ukemaisa diktino dabaye. And like the incident involving the small amount of land that was involving Abaye, Rashi explains, Kihahu Maisa de Kinabai, Bemishoya no Sui, Biksubas. This is the name of the parak in Ksubas, where this story of Kinabai appears. Dahu Dahavu Maski Bay Meozuzi was an individual from whom they were trying to collect 100 zuz. Vishochiven, the borrower, the one who owed the money, died. Vishoviktina Shovichamshim. He left a small piece of land worth half the amount. Also, Balchov Torfuha, the creditor came and collected the small piece of land. Also, Yasmi Yavi Le Chamshin. The heirs wanted that piece of land, so they offered in exchange cash to the lender. And they offered 50 pieces of cash, $50, if you will, and took the land. And then what happened? And Visoku, and removed the lender from the land that he had collected. Hader also v'tarfa. Don't forget, the original loan was not for $50, but $100. So the lender went and repossessed that small piece of land. And the heirs who want, if they want that land, they'll pay another $50 to get it back. So with that analogy in mind, we say that the lender can end up collecting his entire loan, even if the borrower, upon death, left a small amount of karka. And of course, this ties into the point mentioned before, that the yorshin that can give rishus to the lender to continue this arrangement are yorshim that inherited karka. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, the amount of karka that they inherited would be irrelevant. Tanu Rabbanan. Before we continue in the Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading, Hafroshas Maisers Utrumas Maiser. This section of Gemara will deal with laws that are relevant to tithing in general. Yisrael Sh'omar Lelevi. We're continuing the Gemara. A Yisrael who has a field, and he says to a Levi, Maiser Yesh L'cho B'yodi. I have maisers that I owe you, so to speak. I have maisers that are coming your way. Ein choishishin l'trumas maiser shabo. We don't consider that there is the Levi declared a trumas maiser tithe. Now, trumas maiser is a tenth of the tenth that's given to the Levi. The Levi receives his Meiser tithe, and then he, the Levi, takes off 10% of that and gives that to a Kohen. We take a look at the Rashi. Yisrael Shomer LeLevi, Kula Meforesh V'Ozel, this is going to be explained as we go on. Meiser Yesh L'cho B'Yodi, Shifrashti Mitvuasi L'Tzorchecha, I set aside a tenth of my produce as Meiser for you. The source itself says, "Ein choishishin l'trumas ma'aser shabo," and as Rashi pointed out, this will be explained in greater detail as we go along. The next point mentioned in the source is the Yisrael telling the Levi, "Kur ma'aser yesh l'cha biyadi." Here he specifies an amount. A kur is a certain measure, and he says, "I have a kur of ma'aser from my tithes for you, choshishin l'trumas maiser shabo." One then has to take into consideration the fact that the trumas maiser may have been declared. Triangles that you see marked in the Gemara are explained on the side under our Mivneh heading, Shalosh Nisyonis l'hasbir habraisa Yisrael Shomer l'Levi v'chulei. Three attempts to explain the source that we just read. So Omar Abaye, in response to the question of my comma, what was just said? What does this source mean? So Omar Abaye, Hochi Komar, Yisrael Shomer LeLevi, Maiser Yesh L'cho B'yodi, a Yisrael that says to a Levi, you know, I tithe, Maiser tithes for you, V'heloch domov, and instead of my delivering you the tithe, take the cash value. Ein choishishin shema asoi trumas maiser al mokom achir. You don't have to worry. In other words, this Yisrael can enjoy the maiser. After all, he paid the Levi for it, and he doesn't have to worry that maybe the Levi declared those maiseris as a trumas meiser tithe that the Levi happens to owe for other grains that he has in his possession. However, kur ma'aser yesh lecha biyadi v'heilach damav, if the Yisrael offered the following information, that I have a kur of ma'aser for you, and here's the money, I want to keep it, it's not going to be so beneficial for the Yisrael, even though he paid the Levi the money, because chayshishin shem aso trumas ma'aser al mokam acher. We suspect that the Levi, now that he knows the amount of ma'aser coming his way, so just imagine for a moment that this Levi happened to have 10 kur of untithed ma'aser rishon. We say untithed ma'aser rishon, as we said before, that's a reference to the trumas ma'aser that a Levi has to give from the ma'asers he received to a Kohen. Now, if he had 10 kor of ma'aser that were untithed, so 10% of that is one kor. Here he hears a Yisrael saying to him, the Levi, that he has a kor of ma'aser. This source tells us that even though the Yisrael paid for it, he won't be able to benefit from it, because it might very well be that Levi dedicated the kor that he was anticipating from this Yisrael as Trumas Meiser for other Meisers that he has. And Trumas Meiser has the din of Truma. It's a tithe to a Kohen, and non-Kohanim cannot eat from it. The Gemara challenges Abaye's explanation. Otu birashi askinon deshakli domi umashvu le Trumas Meiser. Could it be that we're dealing with the wicked, that the Levi in this case would have taken money from the Yisrael and then declared the produce that the Yisrael intended to keep because of his having purchased it from the Levi, and then the Levi declaring it Trumas Meiser, thereby making it forbidden to the Yisrael who just bought it? Hello, Omar Rav Misharshia Brei de Rav Idi. Ochi Omar. A second approach to the original source. Yisrael Shomar Leben Levi. And Yisrael said to the son of a Levi. Obviously, the son of a Levi is also a Levi, but you'll see in the context why we're referring to him as a Ben Levi. So Yisrael says, Meiser Lovicha Biyodi. I had set aside Meiser when your father was alive, and I told him so, that he has Meiser in my possession. Heloch Domov, here, take the money. I want to keep the Meisers, and here's the money for it. Ein Choshish and Shema Asoy Oviv Trumas Meiser Al Mokom Ach Echer. We don't have to suspect that the father had declared these Meisers as Trumas Meiser for other untithed Meisers. The father couldn't have possibly done so because he didn't know how much Meiser this Yisrael had offered him, had mentioned to him in the first place. However, Kur Meiser Lovicha Biyodi, if he had told the father that I have a specific amount of Meiser, and in his dealing with the father, there was no money paid. V'heiluch domov, and now the Yisrael says to the son of that Levi, here, take the cash. I want to keep that kur of Meiser for myself. Choshishin shema asoy oviv trumas Meiser al mokom acher. We have to consider that maybe that father, as soon as he heard the amount of Meiser the Yisrael was promising him, he, the father, declared it as Trumas Meiser for other untithed Meisers that he had. And why would we suspect that? Because that father heard the amount and he calculated, oh, that is in fact 1/10 of the untithed maisers that I have, how convenient it would be for me simply to declare that core the trumas maiser, and the other maisers I, the Levi, could start eating. The Gemara challenges this by the question, V'chinech shedu chaverim litrom shalom min hamukaf? Chaverim are people that are diligent in observing the laws of tithing. The term shalom min hamukaf means tithes that are not next to the produce that is being exempted. In this case, we would have what we would call maybe long distance tithing. The father had nine untithed kor of Meiser Rishon, and in his house. And the Meisers that are in the house of this Yisrael are going to then be dedicated as Trumas Meiser while this kor is in a different location. That's not the proper way of tithing. When you tithe, the tithe is removed from the produce right next to it. In other words, the untithed produce is next to that which you are dedicating as the tithe. So the description of Masharshi gave us would have presented us with this problem of Truma Shalom Min HaMukaf, tithing. The word litrom has to do with tithing in general. Here we're dealing with the tithing of the trumas meiser tithe, but at a distance. Elo Omar Rav Ashi Hochi Ka'omar Ben Yisrael Sh'omar LeLevi. A Yisrael said to a Levi, Kach Omar Li Abo. My father told me before his death, Meiser L'cho B'yodi. O Meiser Lavicha Biyadi. My father told me that he had Meisers either for you, or he had Meisers for your father. Choshishin Lutrumas Meiser Shebo. The Levi has to consider that the Trumas Meiser is still latent within it. Kevin de Lokitz. Since there was no stated amount, a fixed amount. Kitz is a stated fixed amount. So since there was no stated amount, we suspect that the Meiser Rishon spoken of here has not been tithed. Rashi, on the first wide line under the Gemara text, says Latrumas Meiser Horeuya Linotel Hemenu, the Trumas Meiser that's fit to be removed from this Meiser. V'afapi shechazok al chover sheinu nifter min oilum at shisakin kol peres tvolim shebiyodu. Even though there's a given that a chover, a diligent person, would not die prior to having taken care of all his tithing. Hacha ikol mechash. Here there is room to suspect that maybe it wasn't done. The kevin delo shelo hizkir betzavosu schum mida. Since an actual amount, a fixed amount, was not stated, lo hoya yodea kamo yesh. He himself didn't know how much he had, and he died before measuring it and then tithing it. The source goes on. We go back to the text of the Gemara. Kor Meiser L'cha B'yadi, O Kor Meiser L'avicha B'yadi. If the father of this Yisrael said to the Levi, quoting his father, he says, I have a Kor of Meiser for your father, while the Levi's father was still alive. Ein choshishin l'trumas meiser shebo. One does not have to suspect that the trumas meiser is still latent within these meisers. Kevon the kitz, since the amount was known, was fixed, was stated, tikune takne balabais, you can rest assured that the original balabais took care of the trumas meiser tithe. Now, you might be wondering, the original Baal HaBayis here wasn't a Levi, and it's a Levi who is charged with separating the Trumas Meiser from his Meisers. So the Gemara asks, V'chi yesh lo rishus le Baal HaBayis litrom Trumas Meiser? Does the Yisrael have a right to tithe the Trumas Meiser? The Meiser itself is not his. It belongs to a Levi. It's a tithe delivered to a Levi. So it would, in effect, be a case of Torem Shalom Midas. You have a Yisrael taking care of the Trumas Meiser without the knowledge of the real owner, i.e. a Levi. So, very simply, does the Yisrael, Baal HaBayis, have rishus to, does he have permission to tithe the Trumas Meiser tithe? Gemara says, in fact, he does. But it's based on a particular Tanaic approach. Abba Elozer ben Gamlo hi. It's the opinion of Abba Elozer. Desanyo, Abba Elozer ben Gamlo oimer. V'nechshav lochem trumaschem. This is a posuk in the Torah dealing with tithes. And it says, V'nechshav lochem trumaschem. Trumaschem is a word in the plural. It's truma in the plural. And we continue at the top of Daf Lamed Aleph. B'shtei trumas hakosav medaber. The pasuk is alluding to two kinds of truma. Achas truma gedola v'achas trumas meiser. Truma gedola is the standard case of truma tithe that a person separates from his field. We generally say 2% of his field for the Kohen. And the pasuk is referring also to Trumas Meiser, the tenth of the Meiser Rishon that is separated and also given to the Kohen. Kishem Shetruma Gedola Nitilis Be'imid V'machshava. Just like Truma Gedola can be separated through approximation. Omen means approximation as opposed to exact measurement. Machshava means, even without physically separating, simply by imagining what the Rashi says, noising enough, he looks at a certain corner of his harvest and says and declares that this corner of this, like my, the northern corner of my northeastern corner of my harvest is truma. That's a way of tithing. It's a legitimate way of tithing. Of course, eventually you have to set it aside. You have to physically remove it and deliver it to the Kohen. But in the meantime, that is considered a tithing. So just like Truma Gedola is removed or separated through estimate and through Machshava, Kach Trumas Meiser Nitelis Ba'imed Uva Machshava. And we continue the parallels. Ukeshem Shiesh Lo Rishus Lebalavais Litram Truma Gedola. And just like the regular owner of a field separates the Truma Gedola, Kach Yesh Lo Rishus Lebalavais Litram Trumas Meiser. So too the original owner has the right to take care of the Trumas Meiser tithe as well. Of course, you can see we've dashed underline that because that's the main reason for bringing in this source. So after seeing three explanations concerning the original source dealing with the tithing, we have Rav Ashi's approach that stands up against all questioning, and in order to explain it, finally we have to adopt Abba Elozer's approach to tithing. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.